from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum in our opening hour this morning, a bipartisan committee of business and policy and political luminaries has just released a report of their plans to update and modernize California governance, including an overhaul of the state's tax system. We'll hear about their ideas for fixing California. Former Governor Gray Davis, a member of the committee, and veteran political columnist Dan Walters will be joining us for the discussion. And we'll take your calls, emails, and online questions and comments after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. After a year of deliberation, an independent coalition of 16 California leaders have come up with a sweeping proposed overhaul of California's tax system. The bipartisan Think Long Committee for California released its report yesterday, focusing on a long-term fix for California's governance, aiming specifically at stabilizing the state's finances and rebooting and changing the economy. The committee includes such luminaries as former Supreme Court Chief Justice Ron George, former San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown, former Clinton Economic Advisor Laura Tyson, Google's Eric Schmidt, former Governor Gray Davis, and former Secretaries of State George Shultz and Condoleezza Rice. The recommendations of the committee will be tied to two ballot measures financed by the committee chair, billionaire Nicholas Berggruen, who has pledged $20 million and who believes California can be fixed. In this opening Forum Hour, we focus on the report of the Think Long Committee for California and what it may mean for the Golden State. And joining us from Los Angeles is former Governor of California, now a lawyer at Loeb & Loeb, Gray Davis, member of the Think Long Committee for California of the Nicholas Berggruen Institute. And Gray Davis, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
It's my pleasure. Nice to talk to you again, Michael.
Well, I guess let's begin by giving our listeners an idea of what prompted this. It actually was sort of the brainchild of Berggruen, wasn't it?
He deserves the credit because he assembled a number of us who, for the last several years, in our own way, have been trying to do what we can to make California better. You know, we want to pass on to the next generation the opportunities we got from our fathers and grandparents, and that just wasn't happening. We had to, for a long, long time, we had the worst credit rating in the country, the second highest unemployment rate, budgets constantly late in Sacramento. And so he gathered a number of us who were determined to, as volunteers, contribute our best thinking and fashion a bipartisan solution, and happily that's what we did.
Well, let's talk about that solution because it really represents major structural changes, and it would, to begin, raise about an additional $10 billion annually by really overhauling the state tax system.
Yes, we tried to do two things. Again, our mission, Michael, is not to fix the immediate problem, but to think long-term. Long-term in Sacramento was like next week. We're trying to look 5, 10, 20 years down the road. More than any other state, California has relied disproportionately on the income tax for its revenue base. And in good years, that's great, but in bad years, that's terrible. And so we wanted to shift from over-reliance on the income tax to the sales tax, which is more dependable, like a tortoise, slow but steady. And that's sort of the essential tax reform. We reduce everyone in every category's income tax. We double the homeowner's exemption. We reduce the sales tax on the purchase of things. You buy a car, it's 0.5% cheaper. But we do extend the sales tax to that part of the economy.
And forgive me, that's a 5% sales tax.
Right. Does not currently have a sales tax applied to it. I mean, if you think 70 years ago, we were largely a manufacturing and agricultural economy, and almost everyone pays a sales tax. But now law firms, accounting firms, financial services firms, they don't pay it. So that's the basic shift.
And again, that would be on all services pretty much, except for health care and education. And it would begin, from what I read in the report, July the 13th?
Excuse me? Oh, yeah, it begins in fiscal year 2013.
July 2013. And
initially, the additional $10 million that is generated goes to pay down debt. As I say, we have the worst credit rating. We've accumulated an awful lot of debt over the last 20 years. But then 75% of it will go directly to K-12 or K-12 or the community colleges, the Cal State system or the UC system. And the other 25% will go locally for public safety and other projects.
But correct me if I'm wrong, you may have a big obstacle with the education lobby because of the elimination of the constitutional amendment that the state must repay schools when it imposes certain budget costs and eliminate that $10 billion obligation to schools.
We're going to have a lot of challenges, but we work very closely with the education community. We've tried to accommodate their concerns. In theory, they have something called the maintenance factor. I won't get into the weeds. They rarely ever get any cash out of that. It's used as leverage to see if the legislature won't give them more money for in other areas. But we give them basically 50 cents on the dollar, assuming they would collect the dollar, which they don't. In perpetuity. So that's $5 billion on top of what they currently get every year, as well as $2.5 billion for Cal State and the UC system. The $5 billion goes to K-12 and the community college system. So this is new cash that they don't currently get, and I think long-term it's a positive for education. One of the things we wanted to do, Michael, is not just stabilize the revenues to Sacramento, but create more jobs in the state. And frankly, you can't do it when you have the second highest corporate rate, which we also lower, and the one of the highest personal income tax rates. So the combination of relying less on the personal income tax and more on what is really a consumption tax, we think will make this a more attractive state for investors, entrepreneurs, create more jobs. So fixing education is the key to our economy, and the change in the tax structure will also provide more jobs and stimulate the economy. So nothing is perfect, but we think this puts California on a more stable footing and gives future generations more opportunities than they have today.
Talking with former Governor Gray Davis, former governor of California, now a lawyer at Loeb & Loeb. He's with us from Los Angeles, a member of the Think Long Committee for California, which released their report on Monday. I wanted to get some of the specifics here, Governor Davis, and that is, well, the elimination of personal income tax deductions, except on mortgage interest, property tax, or charitable donations. But you mentioned the lowering of the corporate tax. That would be 1.4%. And it would you're also talking about raising taxes on out-of-state firms in this, aren't we?
Well, you know, right. I don't want to get on the weeds and everything, but basically, if you make $100,000 or less, your income taxes will go down dramatically. Nobody will pay taxes if their income is $45,000 or less. They'll pay no taxes. And if you're under $100,000, your tax rate will be 2%, and that'll be a substantial reduction. So we've tried to do a number of things that shift reliance from the personal income tax to discretionary purchases.
And we got $20 million to bankroll this going on the November ballot, but I wonder if you could assess how a $10 billion tax hike next November will go down when you have, with the citizens and with the voters. You got multiple groups with threatening opposing-type tax measures, and there may even be other reform measures.
There will be other reform measures. This is not easy stuff we're doing, but we think getting some prominent Republicans and Democrats together for over a year, and believe me, we had some very animated, very heated discussions, actually come to an agreement for what is best in California's long-term interest will be something that the voters, once they analyze it, will think is good for them and good for their children. There will be a lot of clutter on the ballot. There will be three or four other initiatives affecting revenues. And so we'll have to not only have the generous contributions from our founder, Nicholas Pogruin, but I think other members of the committee and other members of the public will, when they understand this, get behind it.
Well, let's hear what the public has to say. I mean, you've heard the outlines, a bit skeletal to be sure, but some of the specifics as well. And we'd like to hear from you. We're talking to former Governor of California, Gray Davis, about the Think Long Committee report for the state of California trying to reboot the economy and change really the tax structure, and like to hear any questions or comments you have. So now would be the time to bring them forward. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. And Governor Davis will only be with us till a half hour. So we'll talk after that with Dan Walters and Mark Paul, as well as Robert Hertzberg, who's on the committee. But you can join us, and please feel free to do that. Again, the toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also email any questions or comments you might have. For Gray Davis, the email address is forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments on our website. Go to kqed.org/forum and click on this segment. And, of course, you can also go to our Facebook page and bring forth any questions or comments. Boy, if this bipartisan committee can work together and hammer out something like this, it almost gives hope for the super committee, but the super committee has failed. I just wonder, this is did you have in mind not only the future of California in the long run, but maybe a paradigm for national bipartisan agreements?
Well, I have to confess that we did want to show that people of goodwill could work together. I mean, I'm not thrilled with every nook and cranny of this proposal, but I think on balance, this is really good for the state. Particularly, and so all of us made concessions, and all of us feel that this really will put California back on track. We say we want to renew California, reboot it, renew it, start again. And I think this is a very thoughtful and very sound plan that when people look at it in its totality, they will understand what we were trying to do. Don't rely as much on income tax for the running of the government, because that is subject to wild swings. Make the state more attractive so we create more jobs, give people more opportunity. I think the purposes were sound, and the plans to implement those purposes are sound as well.
That's also an attempt maybe to show that this is indeed the can-do state and all of that kind of hip, hip, hooray stuff. But I wonder, I have to ask you, Gray Davis, whether you feel vindicated, because the voters were frustrated but maybe are realizing now that the problems are more structural?
You know, I leave that up to voters and historians. I believe if you want to help the state from the sidelines, which is where I am and continue to be, or expect to be, you just keep looking forward to the future. And we have to change some things that got California off track. We shouldn't have the worst credit rating in the country. We shouldn't have the second highest unemployment rate. And we have to. We can't pretend that doesn't exist. So we need to see what structural changes could we come up with in a bipartisan way that get us back on track. Now, initially, the money gets used to pay down debt. For the first couple of years, it pays down the debt the state has accumulated. But once that happens, then we provide additional money through K-12, additional money to get the universities back on track. And I might add, a recent private study, Michael, found that 4 of the 13 best universities in the world were in California, even though for the last several years we've reduced funding to them dramatically. So education really is the key to our economy. But looked at this package, if you look at this package as a totality, I think it does a lot of things California needs to get back on track.
Well, we're getting, as you could well imagine, a lot of responses. I'm going to go to the calls in just a moment, but let me go to a couple of emails first. This is Marcia in Sacramento. It says, surely Gray Davis understands and appreciates that sales tax will target the poor and working class who must buy, while income tax, especially a truly progressive tax, can be applied to the wealthy as well. Can you ask about this? And I have. Gray Davis?
Yeah, our plan, Michael, was really predicated on a study by the legislative analyst, the nonpartisan legislative analyst in Sacramento. He said in 1970, 27% of the state revenues came from the personal income tax. In 2011, 57%. So what happens when the stock market is down, the housing prices are down? You know, the wealthy, who under this plan will pay 62% under our plan, will pay 62% of all the personal income taxes. But the wealthy make less money, and so we have to cut education. We have the shortest school year in the country, and they're talking about shortening it possibly to 4 days a week in some parts of the state. It just doesn't work. It feels good to tax the rich, and it feels great in good years. But we know the economy is like the tide. The tide comes in, the tide comes out. So to put this state on a more stable footing, the legislative analyst believes we should reduce reliance on the personal income tax, and that's what we've done. Now, the sales tax, it is regressive, and we've done a number of things in here to kind of buffer that, including a sales tax rebate to people in the lower incomes and another number of other features, like reducing the sales tax on everyone who makes a purchase. If you buy a car, if you buy any, you know, any furniture, anything like that, we've reduced it from 5% down to 4.5%. So there's a number of factors in this report that cushion this notion of regressivity.
One more email, and then we'll go to your calls. And this is from a listener. It says, how tone-deaf is it to propose a massive shift of the tax burden in California from the wealthy to the middle class during massive statewide protests against this exact thing? California's budget will not be fixed until we fix Prop 13, period. And, of course, we're hearing a lot of that.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the people's sort of knee-jerk response. I don't mean to degrade it or diminish it by couching it that way. But if you look at the plan, Michael, more tax relief goes to the middle class than any other segment. We're very conscious of that, and we understand the middle class is the bedrock of America. We want the middle class to be able to go to education, be able to afford to go to college and university and have the skill sets to compete in the global economy. I understand how that is people can come up with that at first blush. But if you actually even read a summary of the report, you know, when we double the homeowner's exemption, as I say, we reduce the sales tax when you're buying something. We give a sales tax rebate to people with a lower income. We do a whole bunch of things to buffer this notion of shifting the burden. And the middle class does get the lion's share of the tax relief on the personal income tax.
Again, Gray Davis with us from Los Angeles, former governor of California, now a lawyer with Loeb & Loeb, and let's go to your calls. We begin with Brian. Good morning. You're on.
Good morning. I was just wondering if maybe you would look at Prop 13 and getting rid of that exemption for people who own investment properties. It just doesn't seem right that, you know, investments are not being taxed at their current, you know, market value.
Did that come up in discussion, Gray Davis?
It did, and again, this is a bipartisan group. We had former Secretary of State George Shultz and Condi Rice, Jerry Parsky, Terry Semel, who ran Yahoo and Warner Brothers. And we had to operate by consensus. And so the consensus was that the sales tax was more achievable. Obviously, what we want to do is put something on the ballot. We have to get the permission of the voters. And we thought the sales tax was at least as dependable on the property tax and much more achievable at the ballot box.
Let me thank the caller. And I think, Casey, our next caller is kind of on point here. Casey, go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo what former Governor Davis was saying. I just really appreciate and like the plan that I'm hearing about. I like the bipartisan nature of the committee that developed it. And I know a lot of people in the Bay Area talk about reforming Prop 13, but in the rest of the state, that's not such a viable conversation. I work up and down the state in the Central Valley, and this is the first tax reform plan that I've heard that I think will really resonate throughout the state, and I think that's a really important thing to be considering, and part of why I think I'm going to get really behind this. And just a final note, if there's a link to be able to see more of the plan, that would be nice if you could tell us how to do that.
Okay, Casey, thank you for the call. I think if you go to the Nicholas Berggruen Institute, you can go to your search engine or simply look it up on the website. You can probably find the whole plan. Governor Davis, isn't that true?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, we'll put the link on our site for those of you who are interested in reading the whole plan. In the meantime, we'll get Dick on here from Petaluma. Dick, join us.
Hi. Gray Davis, you mentioned that the key to California's future is education. I haven't read this proposal yet. My gut feeling is that the key to California's future is figuring out who owns the water and how we're really going to deal with that. And I'm curious if there's any elements of this whole thing that deals with that, California's future and water and rights and things like that. Thank you.
Yes, we did make a number of suggestions on water, and they're included in our plan. The two proposals that we plan to submit for the public's consideration in 2012 deal with tax reform for the twin purposes I mentioned, stabilizing revenues, avoiding the wild swings, and you raise everything 1 year, then you have to massively cut everything the next year. The creation of what is called a Think Long Committee, which is just a group of citizens that have the right to comment on other ballot initiatives and the right to submit ballot initiatives to the public. We have a whole host of ideas, like in a two-year legislative session, one whole year has to be dedicated to oversight, because every year we pass 1,000 laws, and frankly, you're not in enough peril to require 1,000 more laws every year, and they conflict with one another, and so you have to harmonize them and have them make sense. So we did talk about water, but we don't intend to submit anything to the ballot on that subject in 2012.
Here's Mark. Mark, you're on. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thank you. Responding to the current conversation, I can't help but think or paraphrase Gore Vidal as that, you know, there's really no left or right. There's really just top and bottom. And I'm questioning whether or not the interest in taxing investment properties is just more palatable rather than achievable based on the makeup of this group. And I'm wondering if there really is any representation in this Think Long Committee in the lower tax bracket. And also I'm wondering, questioning the tiered approach, the cutoff at 95K at 7.5%. Why aren't there in-between tiers before the 1% on the super wealthy?
Well, again, this was a plan developed after a year of deliberation with the twofold purpose of trying to provide a more stable funding source for government. And you know, about half of the money we spend in government, 40% of all the money we spend in government goes to K-12. And when you count the universities and Cal State system, you're almost to 50%. But anyway, more stable funding sent to government. And on top of that, to provide 75% of the additional $10 billion to various forms of education, because we know education is the path to a stronger economy, which serves us all, gives us all opportunity. I say that every dream begins with a job. Whatever you want to do with your life, you need to get a job. And when you look at, you know, Occupy Wall Street or Occupy Oakland, that's in part about a feeling of hopelessness, no job opportunities, no real future. So we're trying to address both issues.
Let me thank the caller. And Eric wants to know, one of our listeners is via email, where are the spending cuts in the plan? Raising the sales tax without fixing unsustainable spending is the problem.
We do have a rainy day fund proposal, which we hope will help stabilize spending in Sacramento. Our job, Eric, was not to deal with the short-term issues. We're trying to deal with the long-term. I can't tell you, having spent 31 years of my life in Sacramento, I can't tell you how little long-term thinking there is. I mean, people in June of an election year would decide, oh, my God, we have to put a bond issue on the ballot, and they would throw something together over a couple weekends. I mean, that's not the way to think about infrastructure planning, energy planning, water planning.
Or it's so, very reactive to the moment, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because people are not thinking long-term. Everything is just the next week, the next day, the next hour, and the state doesn't function well in that kind of an environment. So our challenge was really to put together a plan that puts the state back on track, renews California. And people can find, you know, 1,000 reasons to be against it, and that's their right. But our job was to say, in its totality, is this the best way forward to put California back on top, to renew California, to give more opportunity to young people, and we think it is.
Gray Davis, appreciate very much your being with us. We will continue, and in fact, we'll hear from others on the long-term plan, and we'll hear from you. Stay on the line if you're on the line. Think Long Committee for California and their plan. More when we return. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A bipartisan committee of business and policy leaders have just released a report of their plans to update and modernize California governance. It includes an overhaul of the state tax system. We heard from former Governor Gray Davis, a member of that committee. about some of the specifics, and we are going to continue to hear more about the specifics. And also, if you have questions or comments, they are welcome. If you're on the line, hang on. We'll try to get to you. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or post questions or comments you have on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And, of course, you can also go to our Facebook page and post any questions or comments you have there. Joining us from Sacramento is political columnist for the Sacramento Bee, Dan Walters. Good morning, Dan.
Hello there.
Also, say hello to Robert Hertzberg, former Speaker of the California Assembly, who is also on the Think Long Committee of California and the Nicholas Berggruen Institute. And welcome, Bob Hertzberg.
Well, good morning.
Good morning to you. Let me go first, Dan Walters, if I may, to you. And we've talked through the years, scores of programs with you about, well, your skepticism about California being governable. Does this put things in a different light?
Well, it might make California marginally more governable, but I think it really falls short of the structural overhaul that we know. It doesn't really touch the structure of government. It adds to structure, basically, with this kind of super committee, this council of elders, some sort of thing out of the Bible, I guess, to oversee California. But it doesn't do much about changing. It doesn't change the structure of the legislature. It doesn't change the structure of local governments and that sort of thing. And so I think I think it's well-intentioned, and obviously there are a lot of compromises in it because of the bipartisan nature of the committee. But I don't think it really reorients California's governmental and political processes to the state's 21st century reality. And I think that's fundamentally what needs to be done so that we can start making some decisions to have some relationship to that reality.
Let me hear from Assemblyman Hertzberg on that, because Bob Hertzberg, certainly the committee has said that these are very fundamental structural changes.
Yeah, you know, look, I have great regard for Dan Walters and his experience in this stuff, and I've given a lot of thought to this. And, you know, these are constitutional changes in a democracy where things are very sensitive. People, at the end of the day, you just can't wave a magic wand with folks and say, this is the New World Order, this isn't China, where a committee of nine folks get together and make a decision. It really is, how do you elegantly, as Gray Davis was saying, Governor Davis was saying, you know, really think long. And I think there are some really significant structural changes, if you bear with me for a moment, because I just think, you know, and it was a real challenge at the beginning because no one was talking about taxes in the beginning, but it's always about follow the money. If you look at California's history in the last 35 or 40 years, the state has grown dramatically. The amount of reliance on sales tax and personal income tax, its volatility. What we've done here is we've created an element of the growth, the sales tax on services, which will grow the most. It's more than $1 trillion of the size of the economy, and we've basically taken it out of the general fund. So in the near term, there won't be growth in Sacramento. It's all going to be at the local level, and over long term, money's going to go into education. You're going to see a University of California and a state university system that ultimately will be fully funded without volatility. You'll see growth at the local level, and I just think, you know, in power, money. The power follows the money. And just like what happened the last 35 years, the great unintended consequence of Prop 13, well, this was an intended consequence to bring government closer to the people, to devolve power. Why? To enhance participation where people really are involved, to build confidence in government because people can see and feel and touch what they're getting. And it's all based upon a standard of equity and fairness that's different in the law today than what we've seen before. Because the constitutional protections that exist over the last 30 or 40 years to make sure that there's equity and fairness in the process. So I do think it's a fundamental change. It won't happen overnight, but it will fundamentally, and when you add redistricting, open primary, and hopefully term limits that will pass in this next election, it will be a big deal. The only other thing that I wanted, which we didn't get, was a unicameral legislature, again, to devolve power, because I don't think that there's a need for two houses anymore.
Again, Robert Hertzberg is former Speaker of the California Assembly and a member of the Think Long Committee for California. Dan Walters, let's get a little more analysis from you before we bring our callers and our listeners into this. There are going to be, not only interest groups that will not like what they'll see on the ballot, presumably, but there's going to be colliding tax proposals. In fact, the unions will probably have those, will they not?
Well, it's almost certain that the unions would oppose these measures were there on the ballot. Notably, the major union person on the committee abstained, wouldn't vote for it. The unions are already denouncing it. They don't like those provisions for education finance. There's going to be resistance to the idea of shifting some tax burden down into the middle income brackets. You know, I kind of agree. That's absolutely necessary. It's folly for the state to be so utterly dependent on what a handful of rich people are doing in the stock market. The rich can take care of themselves, but it hurts the state, as Gray Davis mentioned, by increasing this volatility and the money gets spent and then it gets cut back. But it's a mess. However, I don't know how they're going to rectify having this on the ballot, along with a proposal probably by Jerry Brown and the unions to increase sales and income taxes of some kind. And there are at least two other tax measures kicking around, one that have to do with corporate taxes, another possibly a sales tax increase dedicated to the schools. You throw three or four ballot measures changing the tax system on the ballot, I think you're asking for all of them to be defeated because the voters will be very, very confused. And several of these things would be working at cross purposes to one another. This is a recipe for political disaster, I think, basically.
And what do you say to that, Robert Herzberg?
You know, first of all, I've been in this process for so many years. Last election cycle, as co-chair of California Forward, we had 105 initiatives that were filed with title and summary, and I think it was less than 10 that actually hit the ballot. This is the kabuki and the dance and the negotiations of people engaged in the process. The difference with Think Long is that we've got the resources. You know, we don't know what everybody else has or doesn't have and what they're actually going to do, number one. And number two is, I don't think we're at cross purposes with the governor's endeavor, because his tax proposal, as I've read in these various stories, is all about the near term, dealing with the emergency and the like, and not dealing with the long term. Our stuff really doesn't really kick in until a few years out and begins to think big picture as opposed to the near term. So I don't think it's inconsistent with that. And just the only other thing I got to tell you is, and this, you know, this was not a committee that spent money on polling and ran around and did this analysis. This is a committee of folks, and we can criticize that there are a bunch of rich folks and the like. But, you know, the question is, are the ideas any good? Are they going to fix California? You know, you look at the founders and framers of our country. They're all a bunch of rich people. George Washington's net worth, according to the statistics, was equal to Bill Gates in terms of unequal dollars. So the question is not whether who supports it. Is it a good idea? Will it fix California in its approach? And lastly, I just want to share that, you know, when for those of us who are historians, when Pat Brown, we all like to look at Pat Brown and say it was great water project and his great leadership. Well, let me tell you, it was polling 20-some points down. It only won by less than a point. Everybody criticized it. It was a boondoggle. It was this and that. Leadership is stepping up to the plate. Do you win? Does it look right? We don't know. No one can make those predictions. But you know what? Everybody's running the other direction. We only have to look at Washington to see what bipartisanship looked like yesterday.
Well, or we look to Sacramento, where there's a lack of agreement because of, this is in some ways heralding one hopes a new kind of paradigm that you can actually sit down and come to conclusions, unlike the super committee or unlike much of what's going on in Sacramento. Actually, it's curious that you mentioned the wealth of those on the committee, because I'm looking at a number of emails that follow that motif. Here's Kai, who says, despite the well-meaning of this committee intentions, this is a travesty of democracy. A nice out-of-state billionaire donates $20 million to reform California. Shouldn't democracy and constitutional reform rise from the people of California and their elected legislators and not an unelected cabal? Did the founding fathers write it into the Constitution? Where is the super committee? The sales tax is regressive, punishing the poor. Taxes should be paid according to their ability to pay, about after fair living expenses. These are the kinds of things you're going to hear as this goes on the ballot. In fact, let me go to the caller here who's been waiting patiently. Karen, go ahead. You're on.
Thank you. Yes, similar theme. I have this concern that the group doesn't seem to know that the poor in California already have the highest effective tax burden of any other income segment. Do they know that the renter's credit is supposed to be tied to the homeowner's exemption? I hear no mention of that. And what concerns me most is that deductions for mortgage interest and property tax are left intact in this plan, according to the website. And those taxes, that tax exemption for mortgage insurance and property tax, gives more benefit to the affluent in California. I calculate at $5.6 billion in the 2006 budget year than any amount of housing subsidy that goes to the poor. So they've done nothing to remedy the upside-down tax system we've already got. In fact, they seem to aggravate it.
Well, Karen, thank you. I'll get a response from Robert Hertzberg and add to that an email from Ken who says, why in the world would you want to double the homeowner's exemption? This has done enough already to make housing prices overinflated.
Well, what we're trying to do is to give some burden. You know, there's a lot of folks in California that are hurting on the housing market. But in addition to that, just so you know, if you read a little deeper, we're also increasing the renter's exemption, so they're treated appropriately in terms of housing costs. But if you drill into this, I understand at the surface it's more difficult to understand, and I get that. But I just want to share with you, Karen, that it really has been thought through. We've gone and we've done a tax incidence study looking at the impact on the poor and the lower income brackets and attempted to maintain the greatest amount of progressivity as we possibly could, still reaching the grand compromise on a bipartisan basis. Of the $10 billion that's net raised on this process, over $7 billion is paid by the top 1%, people who earn $1 million and more. They still pay the lion's share, not just of the taxes, but of the tax increase. So, and what we did was we basically made sure that there was a tax rebate for the people at the bottom to ensure that there was no inequity. So it was really trying, I mean, if you step back for a minute and say, what's the objective we're trying to achieve here? I know that often there's these issues of the left-right that often exist, and certainly we're getting, it's I guess the real genius here is we're getting attacked by both sides. But that the game here is California is a new economy, and we're still being taxed under an old economy. It's services that is over $1 trillion of our economy, and we don't tax them. So we wanted to go that direction and at the same time reduce other taxes where you have volatility, where the personal income tax has grown from 11% to almost over 50% of the budget, which is volatile. And what ends up happening in these initiatives is that if you look in the last number of years, all these initiatives, everybody trying protect the little piece of cheese. Every group, public safety, education, whatever group polls well, is trying to figure a revenue stream that's dedicated to them, environment, this group, that group. And it becomes impossible to manage the state. And so the notion is that if you eliminate the volatility, you create stability for growth, and also for small businesses, people pay their taxes through their personal income tax. So by dramatically reducing their personal income tax, it offsets in a large way. As you take a look, you'll see some of these things on our website as we begin to put them up. We really gave a lot of thought to this. So all I ask the listeners here is to just give this a fair hearing. These are honorable people who worked very hard on a bipartisan basis to try to come up with a solution that sends us in the right direction.
And bring another caller in here. Anne, that's you. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I'm calling. I believe I understood Gray Davis to mention that raising revenues through sales tax, that one major stream of that was going to come from making things that were not currently subject to sales tax become subject to sales tax. For example, services such as, if I understood correctly, lawyers' fees, any kind of service.
All services except health care and education. That's
right. And I think that a lot of the callers who are reacting to sales tax being the main source of revenue may not have gotten that part of the message, in that there are going to be lots of, in this model, a revenue stream that hasn't been tapped at all in terms of sales tax, and that would not be regressive to the poor because a lot of these would be corporations getting services from each other that had been exempt from this whole sales tax before. Do I understand correctly
right, and it's legal services. And is it also a haircut? Yes. Is it an extra nickel for a dollar per haircut? Absolutely. I just want to be fair. But it's also these, when you look, and we did a study, a tax incidence study, and looked at where this money comes from, it is exactly that. It's the big stuff. And that's why, in terms of analyzing the impact on folks, the two things that we found was one, you're right, it is the larger corporations and the like that pay those dollars. That's why they're paying the bulk of this income, this increase. And secondly, we sought to blunt the adverse impact on poor people by creating a process to do that. So that there's been a keen sensitivity to that. And also to a middle class that needs some tax relief. I mean, it, you know, if you're paying taxes and you earned $85,000 a year under the current law, you'd pay $1,150 on an adjusted gross basis. Under our plan, you pay $730, a $420 reduction in your income tax. In addition, you're going to get a little bit of a break on your tax on goods. It was all designed to figure out how do we really get out of the hole. And I think that the reality is people are just sick and tired of the manipulation and being used and gamed. And that's not what's happened here. It's just harder, and it's the truth. And we'll have an app up for people. You can calculate your taxes, make your decisions. But it's a real honest effort to try to drill in with the Democrat and Republican directors of finance coming together for the first time.
Again, Robert Hertzberg is former Speaker of the California Assembly and a member of the Think Long Committee for California, the Nicholas Berggruen Institute. And Dan Walters is, again, a political columnist of Sacramento Bee. We ought to mention, Dan, that part of this plan also includes the creation of an independent citizens watchdog committee. I don't know what your reaction is to that, but I want your reaction to a web comment. One of our listeners says, one of California's problems is ballot box budgeting that ties up funds for specific purposes. How is this not just more ballot box budgeting? I agree that the legislature is dysfunctional, but how does this fix our problems, and is it reasonable to rewrite the tax code through ballot initiatives like this? Now, is that part of your skepticism?
Well, it's ballot box budgeting that would, at least assumedly, fix ballot box budgeting, which just kind of sounds strange to me, but that's kind of what they're proposing here. They're using the system that they criticize to fix the system. So I don't know. That doesn't bother me so much. But I think the idea of this kind of council of elders sort of thing that's been the thing is, it's bothersome. Not that you don't need somebody, some adult supervision in California government, but why not do something about the kids in the sandbox that need that adult supervision? That sounds strange. You don't change how the makeup of the legislature, the governor's still there, but then you have this council of elders looking over the whole thing and saying, we don't like this, we don't like this. We ought to put something on the ballot to fix this, but we don't have to go out and get signatures to do it. It would seem to me that the appointments to that process, that Council of Elders, would become just another way of making the system more complicated rather than making it simpler and more direct and increasing accountability. It calls itself an accountability commission, but it doesn't. It's the one apparently would have the accountability, but the people who should have the accountability wouldn't have the accountability. I don't know, the whole thing seems to be odd. Why not go back and create a structure of government that doesn't need adult supervision? That would seem to be a better way to go to me.
Didn't California Forward move in this direction, or isn't this kind of enhancing what they were doing, Dan Walters?
Well, it is. It's kind of Mr. Hertzberg and some others, this is kind of the second stage of California Forward. They got somebody else with some more money to pay for their activities, and so they could take it to another level. And there's a very good deal of similarity between the thrust and a lot of the stuff I recognize in the plan came out of the kind of the California Forward, which is okay too. There's nothing wrong with that. The question is the quality of the there? Does this really fix California? Does it really realign government with 21st century reality? And the answer is yes. It takes some steps in that direction, particularly in the tax system. But I don't see the political structural reform there that I think California needs, but which would probably take the constitutional convention that's also been kicked around. This is the incrementalist, as I described it in my column this morning, this is the incrementalist approach rather than the Big Bang approach. I'm not sure that California doesn't need the Big Bang approach because incrementalism tends to kind of dissipate energy over time without ever getting to the bottom line, the task at hand, which is really restructuring California's government to make sense.
Yeah, I think, Bob Hertzberg, you wanted in here.
Say over a decade. And if you say that in this decade of a 10-year window, which is not a long time in the history of the state, we end up getting, if we can get a fix on term limits in June, possible. We've got redistricting. We're seeing the impact on that. Open primary, that will determine in this election. We've already seen what that looks like. A change in the tax system, an ability to think long in terms of California. Our thought is that you'll actually have less initiatives on the ballot by having this entity, because the big challenge, we at California Forward trying to put on performance-based budgeting and two-year budgets and just kind of common-sense stuff that pulled through the roof that just passed the legislature on a unanimous basis, but it's impossible to raise the money for the $3 million to put the signatures on the ballot because no one cares about this, because the stuff that goes on the ballot is only based upon people's self-interest. Rarely do you have someone like a Nicholas Berguin and others on a committee who are willing to step up to actually meet this challenge. It's a pretty unique time in our history. And I served in the legislature during the energy crisis a decade ago, and I'll tell you, it was quite frightening that we didn't have anybody who thought long and big picture and had some entity that thought beyond the next 5 minutes. And we thought about this a lot in the global basis, and especially with the benefit of these secretaries of state who are on this board. And I've been traveling the world and over the last number of years, and just to have that view is critically important.
Let me go to more of your calls, and we go next to Berkeley. Leon, you're on.
Thank you. Yes. For a number of decades, I've been keeping track of what seems to me to be an explosion of agreement-making methods and procedures and the use of skilled facilitators in the use of such methods. I'm wondering if anything of this kind was utilized by the current group you're talking about.
Robert Hertzberg?
I'm sorry, using facilitators?
Yeah,
sorry.
I think
skilled
that was
facilitators who help agreements to manifest.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I don't know what kind of facilitators, but certainly we had a number of folks there, and we had a number of presentations, and we had people kind of trying to bring people together among the group. We had a number of outside people and presentations and involvements and trying to build understandings among these things. But you know, you've got a group of pretty talented people I got to tell you, I didn't come out of one meeting not educated and learning as a result of this. And so I don't think there was any professional facilitators in that context, Leon, but certainly there was a great deal of outside interest helping us in this process.
And let me thank Leon for the call and go right to another caller. That's Chris. You're on. Good morning. Welcome to Forum.
Good morning. Thank you. It seems to me one of the problems in California finances is we've gotten away from the principle of user pays. We used to pay for streets and roads and highways with gas taxes and vehicle license fees. Now they're largely sales taxes. We keep talking about large water projects that are going to get paid for out of the general fund rather than from the people who are going to benefit from the water, which is largely agriculture. I wonder whether the committee thought about trying to enshrine some kind of user pays into the system.
Yeah, we just so you know, I mean, this discussion on the water issue is really been an issue of user pays, and I think that there's actually pretty close to a big agreement on some of the big multi-billion-dollar projects in that regard. So that has been a theme that has dominated a lot of recent discussion. It wasn't something that we talked about it a little bit, not a lot, but it wasn't, Chris, it wasn't something that dominated our discussion because we were trying to really deal with this volatility issue and an issue of, unlike the federal government, we have to compete with other states. We hear these stories all the time of people moving out of California. We were concerned about our neighboring states and what our tax rates were compared to theirs. We're concerned about the middle class and the burden of tax on them to make it simpler for them in terms of the whole middle class issue and build a middle class for California and what the future of California looks like. So our broader issue in this, you know, Dan Walters mentions, and I've talked to Mr. Walters about the idea of a parliamentary system, and I actually think he's right about that. And maybe it does require a constitutional convention to ultimately fix the system. I believe that in this new world order we live in, excuse that expression, but that the message is all about devolving power. We no longer need big institutions. No one believes in them or trusts them anymore as spending their money. Bringing government local, where you can know who your local elected official is, and you can see and touch and feel the money you're spent, and you can compete in a world that's changing instantaneously. When Arnold Schwarzenegger got elected, Facebook wasn't even incorporated yet. You know, it's just changing at such a fast pace.
Well, Dan Walters, whenever we talk about structural change, as you well know, Prop 13 always comes up, and it has come up once again in conjunction with this committee report. Here is a listener who writes, any plan that fails to address the property tax pass given corporate landowners by Prop 13, which was sold as relief for homeowners, falls short on fairness, a consequence of this glaring loophole has been the inability of the state to maintain free higher education. And yet what we're hearing from Governor Davis, former Governor Davis, as well as former Assembly Speaker Hertzberg, is this will give education the boost it needs, and it won't be so volatile as it's been.
Yeah, it's almost a separate issue. I mean, one of the things that Proposition 13 did is it shifted responsibility for financing local schools basically to the state. And there's a lot of talk about this so-called loophole of corporate property. The problem is nobody really agrees on whether it actually exists. The California Taxpayer Association, for example, says that taxes on non-homeowner property have actually gone up faster. Property taxes have gone up faster on non-homeowner property than homeowner property over the last 33 years. The California Tax Reform Association says, no, it's the other way around. There's really no agreement even on the underlying data about this supposed loophole. But yet, if you were to deal with it, it would take, first of all, a constitutional amendment because Proposition 13 is in the Constitution. It would require, therefore, a public vote. And Proposition 13 as a whole is very popular with voters. And it's biting off something that probably can't be chewed on, to tell you the truth, at least in this context. But I think the tax provisions in this report, this Think Long report, are probably right on the money, is that you have to reduce the dependence on the income tax because the income tax is overwhelmingly paid by a handful of well-to-do people whose incomes go up and down a lot. Now, like I say, they can take care of themselves, but it causes all sorts of mischief for the state, of windfalls that are spent and obligate the state to things that they can't afford later and everything. So pulling the income tax down, raising up the sales tax as a more stable form of revenue actually is a step in the right direction. As controversial as it is, because it does involve tax shifting tax burdens into the middle class from the overclass, one could say, is controversial. But in the interest of the state itself, it's probably something that needs to be done to bring the tax system into more alignment with what we are as a society.
Well, we'll have to leave it there because we come to the end of the hour. But thank you, Dan Walters, veteran political columnist with Sacramento Bee. And thank you, Robert Hertzberg, former Speaker of the California Assembly, also a member of the Think Long Committee for California. You can read that committee report on our website, kqed.org. And you can continue this conversation on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. Our thanks also to former Governor Gray Davis, who joined us earlier in the program. And thanks to you, our listeners. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our producers are Judy Campbell and Kevin Guillory. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.